One of the most popular questions I get is, how do I test my web application? But I am starting a project and I'm thinking about this of like, how do I make sure it's working right? So how do I start testing with Django, and what do I need to think about? This episode is sponsored by Porkbun, a refreshingly different domain name registrar with over 500 domain extensions available. Porkbun offers everything from .com and .net to .app, .tech, and .dev. Every Porkbun domain comes with lots of freebies like SSL certificates, Whois privacy, URL forwarding, and hosting trials, all backed by 5-year support, 365 days a year. For tech folks, it gets even more exciting. They've even launched a new AI-generated search tool using ChatGPT that is leading the change in how people search for domain names. To celebrate the 5th anniversary of .app, Porkbun is offering a .app or .dev domain name for free to TestNetCode listeners. To get your .app or .dev domain name for free, visit porkbun.com/testandcode or click the link in the show notes. Thank you, Porkbun, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome to Test and Code.
Hi, welcome to a cross episode of Django Chat and Test and Code. This is Will Vincent, joined by Carlton Gibson. Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will.
And we have Brian Aachen with us, the host of Test and Code. Hi, Brian.
Hello. Thanks for setting this up. So
we're trying something new. We both want to talk to each other, and we both have podcasts, so we decided to do a joint podcast and talk about testing PyCon, Django, and do it together and see how it goes. For our listeners who may not know, you are the author of a book on PyTest, and this is a Test and Code podcast, so that's sort of like the one-sentence description, right? Like, we want to talk about specifically testing and Python today with you on our side of the fence.
So I just got back from PyCon, and you were about to tell me before I stopped you when we started recording. Your podcast started somehow with a hallway track.
I run a site called learnjango.com and have some books teaching Django. Carlton just finished 5 years as a Django fellow, so one of two people paid to actually work on Django and do the releases. So that's kind of the quick and dirty on us. But we met at DjangoCon 2018 in San Diego, which was my first Django event. My first tech conference, real tech conference, to be honest, too. And such a great time. And I was introduced to the concept of the hallway track because, of course, I was like, I'm going to see all the talks in person. That's what you do. And then I realized all the poobahs were not in the talks at all. And I was like, that's a little rude. But then I realized there's this hallway track thing and all these great conversations, you know, outside of the main event. And so this podcast came around as an idea of trying to mimic that and share it with others, because I came away saying, wow, like, I had no idea, you know, how great the community was and all these things I learned. And is there some way to share that with others? And that was
nice
on my side, the genesis. And then I asked Carlton if he would be my first guest, and he said, how about co-host? And here we are. So
it was interesting that you bring that up, because sometimes it's awkward and to get started to a podcast started. You get somebody on the podcast and at first you want to like talk about what you're going to talk about, and then you know, to try to get started. But in the hallway track, you can run into somebody and say, oh, hey, hey, good to meet you. Tell me what projects you're working on. And you can just start running and you get a 15-minute conversation in with no stress at all. So,
but there is still a little tension, you know, because we're all, as programmers, often we're introverted, and you know, there's still that sort of nervousness of approaching people sometimes.
I remember the first time I was trying to impress everybody. I'm like, okay, I have to like talk about a project that sounds cool. Carlton, what's is that your story too? You're sticking with it, or
did I make all that up? Or yeah, what was your side of the of our engagement? Like, you know,
Will gave an awesome talk on authentication with Django REST framework, because it's quite complex, and you know, there's a token auth and you know, JWTs and session auth and all these different options. So he gave a really good talk, and so you know, I went to his talk And we started speaking after that. And yeah, and then sometime later, Will said, oh, I'm thinking about doing a podcast. And I was like, oh, well, that sounds really cool. But my favorite podcasts are ones where people kind of chat. It's very difficult, a solo person just by themselves. And so, you know, I was like, why don't we have, you know, we'll have this name. I think he even had the domain Django Chat or something. I was like, that's perfect. Let's just chat about Django. So
nice.
That was it. 100 so episodes later.
Yes, because you normally do this one. It's just you, right? Like, I know you and Michael Kennedy have, or how does that all work? Your podcast network? Because you have a couple.
Ooh, right? A podcast network. Bites. I guess we do have a network.
Right. You each have your own, and then you do one together. Isn't that?
Yeah. So that he and I were kicking around the idea individually before we even met of doing podcasting way back when. And so he started, I started testing code, but it started out as the Python Test Podcast. And I just got tired of saying that. Testing code is easier. Although I've had also people tell me that they thought the podcast was testing code instead of test and code. So I've been a little bit conscious lately to try to enunciate. So it's test and code. But anyway, the testing is first because testing should be first.
We can talk about that.
Michael started Talk Python to me around the same time, but both of us, I think, individually made a conscious choice to support each other, promote each other's podcasts and everything. You know, two social networks could have a larger audience than one. We were doing our individual thing for maybe a year. I can't remember the exact time frame. But he contacted me and said, hey, it'd be kind of fun if we did a podcast together. Of a news format sort of thing of like a few news items every week. So we tried it and I love the format. It's a really fun thing to be able to, we talk about like four to six topics, with six if we have a guest host on, but everybody picks a couple topics to talk about, and it could be anything Python related usually. or sometimes mostly we thought it'd be news most of the time, but sometimes it's just a cool project that we haven't covered yet. And it could be an existing older project. And a lot of people have given us feedback that they just constantly have like a list of things they want to try out because of our podcast, which is nice. But the having another co-host gets you to do it every week.
There's no way I'd be doing this if it was just me still. I mean, it's so much easier with a co-host to just sometimes you're like, I'm out of it this week. Like, you need to do the lifting. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, like Carlton's been great about, we started off weekly and then we've been going every other week and we take breaks sometimes because kind of the key thing is not to burn ourselves out. And we have thousands of listeners, but it's not like it's not a moneymaker for us. So we want to stay sane. At this point, for me, it's frankly a chance to talk to interesting people and like have an organized chat with Carlton. Like, you know, everything else is secondary. Like, you know, I guess, marketing our stuff a bit and all the rest. But it's really just nice to talk shop since, you know, we're all sitting in our own little caves somewhere. You know, we're not like, I'm not overwhelmed with social stimulation with work.
Oh, that's right? That's a good point. The being willing to talk with somebody is like, or having being okay with asking somebody to talk with you is something that a podcast gives you that's really pretty cool. Because I've reached out to people that I would have never just reached out in person and said, hey, you don't know me, but can we talk for like an hour?
Hour of your massively valuable time. Can I just have that, please?
Yeah. Carlton, you just got done being a Django fellow. And
yes,
I guess I'm not. Yes. I'm not involved.
The sigh.
I'm not involved with Django enough yet. I do a little Django, but I don't know what a fellow is.
Okay, so Django is
Django just appears and updates itself, and yeah, right, that's
well, it's quite a big project, and it's got a lot of history, and it just give you an idea on the Django issue tracker. There's 3 to 5 new trick tickets opened every single day. So there's like 1,000+ tickets every year. And, you know, and that's gone on years. The security reports that come in pretty much every week, and they need triaging, they need looking at, they need resolving. We do. So in 2022 with the security team, there were 10 CVEs handled through Django security processes. reports. For instance, there's, you know, a constant stream of pull requests that need to be dealt with. There's releases monthly, there's major releases every 8 months, there's, you know, there's community handling that needs doing. And it turns out that on a project the size of Django's, it literally cannot be done just on volunteer effort alone. And so how long ago now? I don't know, maybe 8 years ago, 9 years ago, there was they created the Django Fellowship Program where people were contracted, initially Tim Graham, and then I joined 5 years ago, Marish Felisiak 4 years ago, and Natalia, whose surname I don't know, but really should now, has just started as the new fellow now. And that having a contractor, having someone who's people who are paid, means that the tickets get triaged, means that the pull requests get reviewed, means that the releases go out, you know, on time every month, means that the security patches are done. And I honestly believe that the fellowship program is sort of the reason why Django has been able to survive and not just and didn't die, essentially, that it got to that kind of fruition of an open source project where the original contributors started to fade away. And why did Django not just collapse in on itself and fade away? Well, because of the fellowship program. And I honestly believe it's one of the the reasons why Django is sustainable and reliable and will continue now till probably the heat death of the universe.
And Python's adopting it now too, right?
Yeah, good point. I was just gonna say that was that the Python developer in residence program that they've now got is directly inspired by the success of the Django Fellowship program.
Okay, but apparently we just didn't like the name Fellow.
Well, there's already Python Fellow, so you can be a PSF right. Fellow. Yeah. Which
yeah. Naming is hard, right?
Yeah, so there's a community award for contributions to Python, which is the PSF Fellowships, yeah. And they're awarded quarterly, I believe. And there's Django Software Foundation, and if you're an individual member of the Django Software Foundation, that's the equivalent community award in the Django community.
Okay. Nice.
So that's everything I know.
And how many fellows are there at a time? And
well, currently there's two, and there were two. There was originally one until I came started. I think there might have been the original pilot. There might have been an overlap with it. Burke did it for a few months. Yeah, for a little while. I don't know the very dark history there. I'd need to ask others. But Tim Graham did it for 4 years by himself, which was amazing. He did it full time 4 years by himself. I've always said, so when Tim stepped down, there was some conversation, well, Carlton, do you want to carry on? Do you want to go full time? So I did it part time for 5 years. I said, I didn't really want to do it full time. And I didn't want to be the only fellow because it's really hard. Like you're on the sort of front edge of the fire hose, you know, it's a really big jet of traffic that comes at you. And a lot of it, you have to say, sorry, this isn't a valid request, or, you know, we're not going to add this. You have to close a lot of tickets as won't fix. And people get very upset when their idea is rejected. And sometimes you get it on the nose. You know, people aren't necessarily meaning to take it out on you, but they do.
So
to have some support is important.
One of the things that Python has is we used to have the BDFL and now we have the steering council. Does mm-hmm. Django have a similar sort of idea?
Yeah, so there is a technical board, which was called technical board. It's now called the steering council. There's going to be elections for the new version of that coming up for the 5.x series now. But if in Django, we try and work by consensus. So normally there's a mailing list or the forum where there's a discussion. And if there's not a clear consensus, then it can be we can ask the steering council to have a vote and say what the way it should be. That doesn't happen very often. We're quite good at, you know, trying to accommodate and reaching some consensus. But sometimes it does have to go to the steering council and they have to just make a decision.
Well, if you're a fellow, though, like, do you have enough power to just say, wow, I want this cool new feature. I just want to put it in.
No.
When you're leaving, you can, right? Carlton, you slipped a couple in.
I may have burnt some social capital getting some things through quickly that needed to be done. But,
what was it? There was one in particular. There was something that, you know, was one of those that this isn't controversial. That's why I'm mentioning it. There was something
I have
the last.
I have no idea. I don't remember. I've blanked it all. It's repressed. Okay.
No comment.
I'm on official detox. So I stopped like 2 weeks ago. So I think I'm in week three of stopping. And until the DjangoCon Europe is coming up at the end of May. And I've said, I'm not going to look at Django, and I'm not going to look at track unless, you know, if someone CCs me or at mentions me, then that's fine. But I'm not just going to watch the notification, because 5 years of every comment, every commit, every pull request, every ticket, every, you just need to step away and cleanse the habit of checking that. So I don't really know what's going on at the moment, which is lovely.
I was just going to add, Brian, so Django's history, there were two BDFLs who stepped down actually before Guido did, but like Python, Django was set up as a nonprofit. So The fact that it's a nonprofit is why there are some volunteers who run a board. We could talk about that. I just also left. I spent the last 3 years as treasurer on the board running the money. So, but that's what funds the fellowship program, and that's kind of how it's very community-based, which generally works well. It means we go a little slower, but there's a churn of people. So when someone gets burned out, like, you know, not burned out, but 5 years, Carlton needed a break. Like as treasurer, 3 years, I needed a break. There's other people there, and, you know, we're still involved in the system. Like Carlton just released a Django Skunkworks project, you know, last week. So there's a recycling that keeps it fresh.
Well, one of the things we wanted to talk about was testing a little bit. And I'm really happy that you guys are here, because I get a lot of questions about it. Since I run Test and Code, wrote a book on testing, one of the most popular questions I get is, how do I test my web application? I'm not a professional web developer. I'm a professional embedded software engineer. So not my wheelhouse, really, but my deflectiveness sometimes is, just you run through the API instead of the front end then. But that's not really fair. But Django's, and I was, the first time I interviewed you, I didn't have enough experience with Django to ask decent questions also. So there was technical
difficulty. Same for me. I don't even want to look at my responses.
Yeah. So but I have I'm not saying I'm a Django expert yet. I'm still learning Django. I'm a Django newbie, but I am starting a project, and I'm thinking about this of like, how do I make sure it's working right? So I'm really glad. I don't know how to start this conversation other than how do I start testing with Django, and what do I need to think about?
I want Carlton to take that, but I want to just ask you: are you, so as someone who's, you know how to program, you're newish to Django, are you using a starter project? Have you, like, how are you starting? Are you, like, because I have, I'm
yes.
just, yes, I'll leave you with that. What's the process for someone like you who wants to start Django and wants to know how to do it properly?
Well, okay. I'm not sure. So I did a starting Django, and I started the tutorial, and the tutorials, I read slow and I'm very impatient. So I'm like, there's going to be a long time to, it reminded me of my first couple months at Hewlett Packard when I first started out. So I was a pure computer science person. I got hired, to do, I was working on satellite testing at first. But then, quickly moved into oscilloscopes. So doing scopes, no, spectrum analyzers. And one of my managers said, you really should understand electrical engineering, and gave me this big Horowitz book, this huge gray book of, and I'm starting like learning DC circuits and stuff, but I'm working with microwaves, and I'm like, it's going to be so long before we get to microwaves. I'll cheat. And so what I did was I was just nice to people at work and learned the experts in the RF stuff. And I learned enough electrical engineering to talk to the electrical engineers. And so I kind of feel like that with Django. I'm like, I need to find some experts in Django, and I'll just learn how to talk to them, and that will be good. So I have I founded a starter project. There was and I don't even remember the name, but somebody that knows what they're doing. And I'm starting with their.
You're killing me. Can you tell me who it was? Well, I'll speak out loud. So there's one called Cookie Cutter Django, which that's probably the default that people find. And then there's a host of slightly smaller ones. I run one of them. That's why I was sort of curious if you came across it. But there's, I think there's a gap in terms of people who are experienced programmers who want scaffolding to kind of jump in. There's only one really paid starter project for Django, SAS Pegasus that Corey Zhu runs, which is fantastic. So the sort of market question is there room for more? He's I think he's doing that pretty much full time. I'm getting free market research from you because, you know, Django developers, all of us after some period of time have our own personal starter project, just like all the consultant, you know, the agencies have their own. And so it's one of these standard, you know, you're having a pint and you're like, you know, what if I charge for my starter project? Like, how much work could it be? You know, it's the code is the least of it.
Well, the answer
that's kind of why I was.
The answer is probably it's more work than you think. And it's probably good that it's.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it might be worth it. I think there's room. I think that there could be dozens of scripts. Maybe dozens would be confusing to the marketplace, but a handful of, I could easily, there's different target audiences too. So like you were saying, the SAS Pegasus, that's a particular kind of thing that's, as far as my brief looking at it, it's targeting paid subscription-based kind of projects, which not all projects are like that. So your project might not be. So,
yeah, well, that's what I was going to ask you. So you said testing. I mean, that project has a lot of things in it. It does have, you know, a lot of great things. The payments thing seems to be the one that lets people open up their wallet, as opposed to, sorry, Carlton. I'm just like this.
I like your MBA wisdom as you do the market analysis on this.
Oh God, as I sit in a psych ward, podcasting booth. But anyways, yeah. So anyways, Carlton, testing. Where should Brian start?
Okay, so you should start with Django's test client. So Django in Django.test, it has the module Django.test, it has a client. And what you can do with that client is you can make a web request to a URL. So you can say get client.get, you know, / homepage, you know, whatever the URL, the path to your homepage is. It might just be just /, it might be nothing. It might be just, you know, the index page. And then it will simulate the actual request. And it will run the request through the web stack, the request response stack. It will give you back the response, and it will also add a few extra features on the response, so you can test things like the template context. So you can get the HTML, and you can say, did the HTML include my header? Or you might not. That might be a bit hard if you're looking for a particular fragment of HTML. So you might say, was this template rendered with this context? So you can get which template was rendered, which context was it? What was the status code? What was, did it redirect to a login view, for instance? So say you've got an authenticated view and you want to check the authentication works, where you'd make a request to that with an anonymous user and assert that it was redirected to your login page, for instance. So you should use the test client.
And does that go through, do you have to have a server running or?
No, that doesn't. So you can, there's a level up from that. So that's the basics. That will do most of your cases where really you don't need the browser behavior. It runs, the test client will sort of use your Django app internally, so to speak. It will make a request to the Django app and get the response, and you can test the HTML, but that's not the browser behavior. So there's a level up where if you need, like, you know, say you've got some JavaScript on the page and you need to test that the JavaScript actually does function, then you would need to use a thing called Selenium or Playwrights, the new kid on the block there. I don't have much to say about which is better there. A lot of people are liking Playwright, but I don't know if the integrations are as mature, is all I can say. In Django's test, we use Selenium. There are lots of tests. And we use that for testing the admin. So for instance, in the admin, there's JavaScript to add a new inline related object you've got the admin, you've got the inline objects, you want to add a new one, there's a bit of JavaScript to do that. Does that work? Well, we have to use a Selenium test for that because it's all JavaScript logic. And that does need, that will, when you run that Selenium test, Django will fire up a live server. It's called live server test case, and it fires up a live server. It opens a Firefox window or whatever your Selenium driver is using. It clicks on the actual buttons as you describe in the test. And it runs it. So you can do that kind of more, that's like, I guess they call that fully end-to-end testing or something like that. You can do that Selenium testing, but those are difficult to write and they're more brittle.
because every time you change your CSS or, you know, the position of a button moves, sometimes it doesn't, the test breaks and you have to fix those. So I would say save those when you need them. But the first port of call is Django's test client.
But like a workflow. So let's say I've got a application where somebody has to log in, and it might be like there's different levels of log, like permissions and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I want to think, okay, I've got a different kind of person logging in, and what do they have access to? Does this workflow work? Going through some stuff. Can I do all of that with the test client, or do I need to do Playwright or something like that?
Pretty much you can do most of it with the test client. Like in most cases you would do. So I'm thinking you might have a view where you start off in the foot, and you might test a sort of a view, a form post view in a kind of couple of tests together. You might break them up into separate functions, or you might just go, right, first of all, make a get request to the page to load the form. Then make a post request with the data, then check that, you know, the object was created. But you can authenticate with the test client, so you can give it, you know, log in with this particular user. And you can either do that by sending it to the login URL, or it's got a shortcut method where you can kind of say, look, log this user in, and then we'll run the rest of the test. Because, you know, there's a teeny bit of boilerplate going via the login view and then back to the other view, which you might not want or need.
And then I'm hoping that there's like some, there's enough structure there that we can, I don't want to do a workflow thing. I'm saying, well, I assume that this kind of a user is already logged in and there's already data there and stuff, and I want to just test this little thing. Is there I'm assuming there's setup stuff you can do
So Django ships some test cases which are based on unit tests. So you know normally in your test set you define a setup function, and that's where you do your fixtures, where you populate the database with whatever you want, and you I can't remember the three A's, but you set it up and then you do some actions and then you assert the what you're looking for.
Arrange.
There you are. Yeah. You arrange what you want in the test case, and then you do some actions, and then you assert that it was. The Django test cases provide some nice assertions, like assert that a query set is equal to, or assert that, I don't know, a warning message was raised, or assert a redirect to a certain URL, or these kind of things. It's got a lot. You know, it's quite mature.
So like Python, Django, the default test framework is a unit test-based thing.
It extends unit tests.
Okay.
Django's test client extends.
Yeah. Whereas I don't think that Python extends it. It's just raw unit testing.
Just easy.
But the 2021 developer survey from JetBrains and Django says that 39%, only 36% of the people use unit test and 39% use PyTest.
You can do that as well. That's because everyone's read your book, Brian. And I do highly recommend that book as well. You can do that. So there's a plugin for PyTest called PyTest Django, which gives you for instance, a fixture for the client, and it gives you a fixture for, the database access. So, PyTest Django will not allow you to access the database unless you tell it, no, I think there's a marker or a fixture. You can use either. But if you use one of them, it lets you access the database. I think there's even a live server fixture. So if you want to do these kind of Selenium tests, I'm not 100% sure, because by preference, I do use Django's test cases. I've used PyTest plenty, and it works just as well.
That was one of my questions, so I'm glad it works just as well. It probably has similar test cases built in or something, hopefully.
The PyTest Django package has got the things that you're looking for when you're migrating away from the Django test cases.
Okay. But I was just curious if you thought these numbers also were real, because the Django's developer survey is like the people that might even know that there's a JetBrains based survey out there.
Well, there's backstory on the surveys. So this is where this will all sound really incestuous. So Django had a survey like 2015 and then hadn't had one for years. Meanwhile, Python has one, which is very helpful to the community. So one of the things when I got on the Django board in 2020 is I wanted to do the survey. So that was one of the things I worked on, was it being in charge of that. So hopefully it happens this year in my absence. But and we've partnered with JetBrains is, you know, so we Django fly blind because we don't track downloads. We don't track anything. Really, how does it being worked? It's what, you know, the fellows see in the issue tracker. It's what's in the forums, and it's what people talk about in the hallways. We know that we're massively blind to a lot of things. So anyway, so the survey was brought about to try to shed some light. Now, we know that a lot more people use Django than take the survey. I think it was something like 8,000 people took it last year. And this is a communication problem that being on the board Django has. How do people find out about anything about Django? It's like, well, if you go to the Django website, used to be you go to the Twitter account. Like, there's no email newsletter for Django. And this is a whole separate discussion Carlton and I have had many times, I think even on this podcast. But there's definitely a lack of light being shown in terms of how are people actually using Django. Anecdotally, the numbers I see in the survey match with my impression.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a American, you know, going to Django cons, right? I'm not like
there's a whole mass of people out there using Django in their, you know, real world situations who are used, I think, don't even know that PyTest is a thing. Like, they download Django, they're using Django. Django says these are the testing tools. They use those testing tools if they test the tool.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I'm just grateful if they test at all.
That's the thing. If they test at all, they're probably, I would imagine there's a big chunk who aren't filling in the survey that are just using the Django tools. But within the developer community, I think, yeah, it probably is represented.
Now, one of the other, another question I had was, early on in reading about Django, and I'm not sure if this has changed, there was a notion of fixtures that were like things that set up the database. Is that still the term used, or is that still a thing that people do? Or
it is a thing. So you can populate a database, and then you can do this. You've got this command to dump data, where it will dump it as JSON files, and then you can load them again with the load data command. It's got all sorts of useful uses. But you can also specify those dump data files as fixtures for a test case, and it will load them in kind of prior to you running your Kessler as fixtures.
Yeah.
I don't think people use that as their first port of call, and I don't really recommend people using that as their first port of call. You're much better off in setup class data, which is a class method that only runs once rather than once per test, creating the objects you need, you know, using the ORM or using factory functions that you've, you know, okay, written to speed up, much like a PyTest fixture that you're familiar with. You create the fixture function that creates the objects. You would do the same, but you just, instead of having it as a fixture function, which you can't ever find, you'd have it in the test case, sort of just above the test that's tested.
And is it difficult to, like, let's say I'm getting started with testing my Django application, but I have a lot. I mean, Django pulls in a lot of stuff. I kind of want to like know if I've covered all of the things I've added. Is coverage? Do people use coverage? Does it make sense?
Yeah. No, and it works. It works really well. There's even a plugin which will help you cover your.
I think Ned maintains. You know, Ned Batchelder, who runs coverage, I think he also runs the coverage Django plugin.
But that will test coverage of your templates, which is quite good, because you might have a little bit of logic in your templates, like a for loop and then an if and then an else branch. And, I didn't test the else branch, you know.
Okay.
Brian, for beginner or people new to Django but who know what they're doing, one of the issues is you don't need to test core Django thing. Django comes with all these tests itself. Yeah. So how do you know what is a core Django behavior versus what is something you did, right? So I think sometimes people end up trying to test Django behavior. So generally, Carlton, you're making a face.
No, I was nodding. I was lining up, you know,
So you said earlier about, you know, test first and, you know, test-driven development. That's a whole discussion. Carlton and I both come down on the side of kind of write your code and then test it. Or better yet, when something changes or when something breaks, then you add the test. So that's a, you know, sort of an in-between system, because anytime, so I, you know, in my books, I lead, I have tests and I show people how to do this. And I'm like, even the beginner's book, like, boom, we test, we're testing everything. When you've changed something, then you add a test. So just because you see hello world, like, you know, you test, does it show hello world? You don't need to test that the view got the temp. I mean, you can, but like, it's only when it's something new. Like, I don't test the admin, for example. Like, I don't test that the admin works, because it should work, because unless I've changed it. If I have changed it, which Django lets you do, then I would run a test to see, oh, does this customization work as planned? So it's when you customize something, you want to test it.
What do you mean by changing the admin? So doesn't just doing anything change the admin, or do you have to, like, would you mean change how admin works, or?
Well, so you can, yeah, that's a valid point. So you can, there's built-in ways to how you display your data, whether you want it kind of how you want it listed. You people can and do abuse the admin, so you can kind of use it as a poor man's CMS. Or maybe there's valid use cases for it, but when you're, so there's changing kind of the graphical layout of the admin, which Django gives you tools to do. You don't need to test that. But if you're, I mean, Carlton, you've seen it used and abused. This is one of the things as a fellow, people, I mean, there's all sorts of thoughts on the admin and trying to make it be more than it is.
The official line is that the admin is not your application, right? So use the admin. The admin is a power tool and it's wonderful and it's one of Django's secret sources and, you know, push it to its limits. But people, when people are like, oh, and can I open it up to the world? No. And can I customize this thing? No, just write a custom view. It's going to be much less work to write a custom view than it is to try and force the admin to do this funny thing that it was never designed to do. So there is a sort of, there needs to be a limit to what the admin can do, not least for maintainability sake. Like, you know.
That's actually something that I, one of my first exposures to Django was an internal project. Not at the company I'm at now, previous company, that was the user interface essentially was the admin page, at the admin level page. And I was like, I don't want to build something like that, because that's, one, I'm talking about like 20-year-old Django probably, or 15-year-old Django. So even that's probably better now. Than it was 15 years ago, of course. But still, if I just want to have somebody enter some stuff, I don't want them to have to go through and look at the data tables and stuff. That's too much.
There's permissions that, the problem is Django lets you kind of do a lot, and you can, like, you can have super, you know, you have a super user and you can have different access. So you can give different people access to the admin and permissions it up a little bit. And then, you know, just you said, it's like, oh, do I really need to build my own custom thing for this when it's kind of working well? Like, you know, at some point, yeah, you do. That's kind of how it plays out, right? Like, it's just me. It's me and Carlton. Oh, now we're a team of 10. There's some non-technical people. We really want them to be able to, like, answer customer support. So we have set on permissions so they can't touch this, but they can enter this. But they're still, like, that's when you get into trouble. Or you start, like, saying, hey, the admin's slow because I'm trying to view, like, a million records within the admin. I mean, there's multiple DjangoCon talks about, you know, using and abusing the admin. So it's a very natural progression. I mean, I probably abuse it too a little bit, but it's more like, it's easy. It happens, but you should avoid it.
So if Django's big and my application, if I do a relatively simple application, I'm changing just a little bit. I'm like using all this stuff and I'm not really changing how Django works. I'm just building a website. I'm assuming my approach probably would be test the thing, like the end user experience. Somebody goes to this page, and is that when you said that, that's, is that testing the views at that point, or or the models?
So the, what does the view do? The view is like the controller in the old MVC thing. The request comes into the view, and the view's job is to turn that request into a response. Okay, so in order to do that, it probably goes to the ORM and it says, can I have some records from the database? And then it grabs a template from the file system and it puts the two together, and it creates a response. Yeah. So test, what do you want to test? You want to test, well, does that load? So you know, for any, if you've created a nice view, create a test that hits it and checks that it returns 200 and maybe that the template was correctly rendered or something, you know, that so that it, okay. it, it
it works. Because one day you'll do something and then you'll just break that view. And that you've got just that test that checked the 200, that it returned an okay response, will tell you that you broke something. Now, you know, if your view has complex logic and it might return a 404. So, if you go to somebody else's repo on GitHub, it goes 404. It just said, if you haven't got the permission for it, if it's a private repo, it just says 404. It doesn't exist. So lots of URLs are like that, where if you've got permission to access the object, it will show you the response 200 and render the template. But if you haven't got permission, it will just say, oh, it didn't exist, or it will redirect you, or it will say 403, like forbidden. So those kind of different responses that you might get, they're worth testing. And then they're quite high level. They're almost integration test level rather than unit test level. But you can spring those around and they give you quite a lot of coverage and quite a lot of sort of juice for your money, if that makes sense. And they're quite easy to write. Anyway, go on, Will.
Well, I think I've, like you, a book author, I've thought about how to present this to people, because I think tests in a Django context, people have no idea where to start, in part because they don't understand how the web works, how Django works, let alone how do I test it. So it's just a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
But you kind of write the same tests over and over and over again. Like, tests are super confusing until they're incredibly boring, to the point where we've ChatGPT and all this stuff, like throwing that at like, what should I test, would be a great use case, actually, because a lot of times you're writing the same tests over and over and over again. And so I was, for someone who's like, what test do I write? Well, you can look at open source projects. Like, if you go to the Awesome Django repo, there's a list of some, see how they do it. You can, if you type in like Django testing tutorial, you'll probably see like Django has docs, Mozilla has one, and then I have one that kind of gives you 80% of all you'll ever need. Like in my books, I show you how to do it. But I mean, if you're doing CRUD and you're doing forms, you're like, as Carlton said, testing the model, testing the view, testing the template, testing the URL. Does it return what I want? Does it not return what's not expected? And you just kind of do that ad infinitum at a certain point. So just like find an example of something. Like, if it's CRUD form stuff, which, 90 whatever percent of the web is, you're kind of writing the same test over and over and over again.
Well, one of the things,
right,
that...
Right, Carlton?
To a certain extent.
I mean, it depends. And then when you have logic, at a base level, as your logic becomes more complex, yes, then things change and, you want to test that out. But if you're just kind of the basics of like, does this page display the information I think it does in the way I think it does? Like, it's kind of the same thing over and over again.
Well, I'm going to take that as a challenge then, because I don't like to write the same thing over and over again.
Okay, but then you get to another level on Django where you, for instance, you're dealing with the ORM. And so what people quite often do will embed domain logic into manager methods or methods on the ORM themselves. Okay. So for instance, I will quite often say I've got a project model, and it's a list of projects, and users are only limited to which projects they can access, via an organization or via a team, or maybe they're the owner. And so on the project model, on the what's called the manager, which is the objects bit in Django, project or objects.filter is the ORM API, but that manager, I'll add a method called for user, and then I can pass in the current user. And then you're writing more of a unit test type of approach, where you've created a few instances, assign some of them to the user, create some for a different user, filter the query set, and make sure only the user's projects are returned.
Okay.
That kind of thing is embedding your domain logic, right? You're checking that works. And then that manager you'll then use in your view, and you don't necessarily need to test again that it was correctly filtered, because you know that the base query set was filtered to that to the request user, for instance, just as an example.
Yeah, we should also say, you as a guest, and to get some free help, Adam Johnson, who's on the technical board of Django, has written two books, one of which is Speed Up Your Django Tests, which I think addresses more of the concerns you have. Like, that's a more, I would say, intermediate advanced level book on testing. And he certainly knows his stuff. So, could do an hour on like, how do you not write the same test twice with him? And
I wanted to ask you, Brian, though. So are you going to be using PyTest? Because you're the expert on PyTest. So will you be using PyTest for testing your project?
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
planning on it. Yes.
Okay. So I have a real question about PyTest, and you're the expert, and I really want to ask this. It's about managing fixtures, because in the unit test world, the fixtures go, the arrange goes in the setup method of the test case cast, and it's right next to it. In PyTest, they do the dependency injection thing where they just, sort of the fixtures live somewhere else and then they get injected. And one thing I've found as projects scale is that it becomes increasingly hard to track down where the fixtures come from. So do you have any kind of advice for, you know, managing your fixtures to keep them maintainable, to keep them trackable? Because I sort of end up at the point where I'm like right-clicking in the IDE and then to go to definition, and I'm like, please take me to the right place because I'm just not sure, you know, as it scales up. Funny if you've got, I'm not a PyTest, you know, I use it, but I'm not like a PyTest aficionado by choice. I'll use the unit test method. So I'm asking.
Well, one of the things that I used to complain about, so there's a couple ways you can do it. Well, the most obvious way now is the --- fixtures command line flag. So if you run in, like, either as a whole, you can run, if you run all your test suites, but if you just run as if you were going to run all the test suites, like, or your particular test, and add the --- fixtures command line, it tells you all the fixtures that are available and where they're defined.
Okay, that's quite cool.
It used to be a fairly quick list. It still is. But you could get more information if you did --- fixtures with like verbose, like -V also. Mm-hmm. But and the verbose used to be the only way you could get the actual file name and line number where it's defined. And now by default, it gives you the file name and line number. So it's really not hard to find them. But I also, you don't have to put them somewhere else. You can put them right in the test file. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to go hunt for them, don't put them somewhere else. You can put them right there. So they're either in the test file or they're in a conf test file somewhere.
Yeah. But yeah, okay. I mean, because one thing I have done is use test classes in the, like, arrange my tests in test classes to keep them grouped together. And it's something that I'm used to, and then use the PyTest runner, you know, and it all works the same and it works perfectly. And then I sometimes feel a bit embarrassed as if I'm doing it wrong or something. Because people,
I mean, there's a lot of fixtures that I write that are only for one test, because I want the setup to be obvious that it's not part of the test. The other thing that you get is if a failure, you can assert within your fixture, and if an assert fails or any with PyTest, any exception causes a failure. But if it's in a fixture, any exception, uncaught exception, causes an error. So that distinction between error and failure is, did the thing that will go wrong happen in the setup, or did it happen in the test itself?
That's a good one. So would you kind of recommend not overcommitting to being super dry, and that you reuse a fixture every, would you rewrite a fixture? Would you, like, so say you've got the same, you know, you different tests, different places in your project, you need a project fixture. Would you be tempted to rewrite the project fixture closer to where it's being used to avoid a bit of confusion?
No, I'll put it wherever at some central point. So you can have a conf test file at any directory, or multiple ones. You can only have one PyTest any file, but you can have multiple conf test files. And the conf test can go all the way up. And the cool thing is you can start out at a file level and then maybe move it to a directory level if you want to share it between tests. And then maybe you can move it up a directory, but the tests don't have to be rewritten. You just move where you've defined the fixture. It doesn't have to be the test. I love that you don't have to rewrite the tests. With unit tests, you have to change the code. Yeah. If you decide you want this fixture, that fixture logic to be at the file level or a class level, that's a completely different thing. Actually, you only have class and function level, right? I think there's,
yeah, but you might move it to a shared module or to, you know,
yeah, something like, but that. The other thing I like is you can change the scoping of it. I mean, so you can say, like reset the database to be a completely clean, absolutely no changes in it. But that might be too time consuming at the around every function. So you could broaden it up and say, I want this to only happen at the beginning of the session. And then if you've gotten bugs all over the place, you can go, well, that was a mistake. And you can dial that down to like a module level or something. And okay. the test still doesn't know about it. The test just says it gets the fixture stuff. The other thing I really like about fixtures is that the setup and teardown are in the same file or in the same function. They're just divided by a yield keyword. Whereas in unit test, you've got the setup and teardown completely separated into two different functions.
Interesting. Yeah, good. So it's you. So the issue there is just, I think the answer to my question is just maintain hygiene, you know, because I've been on projects where I've been a bit like, where's this fixture? And where's that fixture? And I think it was just got a bit messy over time. It's all.
But it's gotten really a lot better, even just recently. Like VS Code just recently implemented the ability to just right click on a fixture and go to the definition. And then also being able to do type hints in it. So if they're well type hinted, like VS Code and PyCharm will also like do code completion for you with the returned object. I probably will get you guys back on because I've got this project that I haven't written any tests for because I haven't actually don't have any running code for it yet. It'll be interesting progression to build this thing up and find out like how I feel about the Django testing environment. And I'm somebody that likes shiny new tools, so I'm sure I'm going to try out like the Django Test Plus. I mean, it's got a plus in it; it's got to be good. Yeah. And I've heard people talk about Factory Boy. I'll probably like try that out, and all these sorts of WYSIWYG features things that. But I also don't like too many things because why pull in a dependency?
You kind of mentioned all. I mean, there's not that many. Like there. Right. There's like maybe one or two other big ones, but there's not a million commonly used third party things with Django.
But there's probably a million uncommonly used ones. So it's
but are they? But why are they? Why are they uncommon though? Right? Why are they uncommon?
I don't know. People don't have their own podcast to plug them on.
One thing I will say is you can use Django with PyTest Django with the plugin. You can use Django's test cases just with the PyTest runner and it just works. And so you know you can experiment writing your test in the Django way and then you can mix in fixtures and you can mix in plain asserts. Because one thing I really love about PyTest is just being able to use plain asserts rather than self.assert and now what was it again? Because you know, so many different asserts, it can be hard to remember.
But there's stuff that like you can't, it's going to be hard to write as an assert. So some of the helper functions are helpful, especially around Django to say like, well, assert that the user's logged in or something. It might be easier as an assert, a helper function than it is as code.
Yes.
Well, what you're verbalizing is very common in that, like, I want to try out all the things, but like, where do I even start? Because you know, Django has third party ecosystem, which is a huge strength. And you can go to djangopackages.org and see however many thousands and thousands there are. But like, which ones do you want to use first, right? So if you went to the testing section, there's a lot. So there is a curated list. And again, I'm plugging my own stuff again here, but it's called Awesome Django that I run with actually the person who runs Django Packages now that has a list of, you know, how many is it? You know, a dozen, right? With this idea of trying to say, okay, well, those of us in the community, there are some packages that have been around for a little while, have a certain number of stars that are maybe a good first place to look rather than just what's new and shiny. Because that is, you know, and there's also things like there's a Django newsletter and stuff to try to both expose people to new things, but also remind people of existing things that are plugging along, like Django Debug Toolbar, for example. Like that's a package that is, you know, I just did a post on like, what do I think are the top, like, I think I said 10 packages, third-party packages you'd use. Like, there's a whole discussion of this. I think everyone's got that probably top five. but who maintains it and who uses it? Like, someone started it, and then there's this group called Jazz Band. Like, so the maintainability and the fact that positive things are still, just like Django itself, like, there's a tremendous amount of stuff in the most recent release of Django 4.2. And yet, from the outside, people say, oh, Django's kind of just Django. Like, right? Like, I don't know if you had that with your books. I mean, you're on the second edition. I'm on, like, the seventh edition. And I basically rewrite them all from scratch. And I'm like, it's so much better. But, like, everyone's like, oh, it's just still there. Right? So, like, it's hard to get people to appreciate, like, you know, just being still around is a huge sign of success, generally, for a code repo, for a book, for a project.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like that, maybe, unless you've maintained one yourself.
Well, so the second edition of the PyTest book wasn't really because the PyTest changed too much. I mean, it had changed, so I did add new things. But it was more around the teaching. So the I didn't feel that the first edition was the appropriate ramp of difficulty. And so the main impetus for rewriting it was, I'd like to start people out with the real basics and then introduce fixtures, try to do it gradually. I think I was a little bit more abrupt than maybe I should be, but that's fixtures come in chapter 3, and then just gradually add on complexity so that by the end, they're pretty much, I mean, if you really understand the whole PyTest book, I think you're a PyTest expert at that point. I'm not teaching 100% of PyTest, but it's the 80% that, or the 50%, 60% that 80% of the people need every day. And then some extra fun stuff. Like, I really want people to write plugins more because it's a great way to, and packages. It's just a packaging extensions. Because that's how they should be sharing code. Even if I don't do a PyPI package internal to a company, people should be sharing their fixtures with the plugin packaging system because it's there. Why not? But I see people trying to share fixtures between projects in some wacky way. And I'm like, there's a built-in mechanism. Just do that. So that might seem like a fancy thing, but you get into companies, and people have those needs, even if they're not writing their own open source project. So
yeah, and if you're the person who knows that, then as well, then that's valuable too.
But the we're kind of getting long, but I do want to come back because at some point, because there's a lot here. The final thing is I'm guessing I don't want to spend 80% of my time testing or thinking about testing. I want to probably spend 80-90% thinking about my problem. And I only want to spend like 10 or 20% in the test thought process. Does that jive with how I can develop Django, or do I need to skew those percentages?
I'd say that's fine. Like, yeah, like, so you mentioned about testing first, right? So when you're developing your sort of domainy bits inside the view, the bits that are going to go into the view layer, and they're going to be like, the view layer is going to call out to those to do its job, then, you know, you can do test-driven development, and you can write nice little tight unit tests for those, and you can build them as you go. And that's where you're having the fun. But the actual testing around the outside, Django is well-tested. It works. You can lay down these simple endpoint tests that we've talked about, and they will give you confidence, but they're quick to write, and they're not difficult. And
okay,
they give you a lot of coverage for not much
effort. So people shouldn't be scared to try testing Django's projects. Okay. Good.
I mean, I don't think I put it in the hello world, but I put it on like the second project that you do, you know? I mean, it's like, you know, and again, not to, I'll give you a copy. Like, you just peek at my book, just flip to the testing sections. But like, okay, I show how to test like a basic thing, how to test a CRUD, how to test something custom. That kind of gives you 80% of what you're going to use in a normal setting.
Okay.
A colleague of mine, when I was a junior, was very keen, a senior colleague, was very keen on writing tests. And I was like, oh, you always write the test. He's like, well, if I don't write the test, I have to click it in a browser.
Yeah.
So just write the little endpoint test. And he was like, no, just say it's quicker than clicking it in the browser every time I make an update. I've got a test. I know it works. And I can keep coding as long as I don't break that test. And then, once or twice, I'll check it in the browser.
Well, we didn't even talk about CI at all in this conversation, you know, all that.
Yes, so we'll have to get back into that, hooking up CI and everything.
Just GitHub Actions.
I want to clear my name, though, because I was disparaged earlier. just a little bit. I'm joking. I think of testing first when I'm thinking about coding, but I don't always write the test first. I just want to make sure that the idea of how am I going to make sure it works is in my mind while I'm coding. That's my advice I give people is just think about how am I going to verify that this works. You can do it afterwards, but just make sure you verify it. That's one of the things I like about coverage, because if I forget, I can run coverage and go, oh, I didn't even cover, I don't test that at all. So, but that's good. I enjoy. So how do I find the podcast? You guys, it's Django Chat.
So we're DjangoChat.com. Okay. And yours is what's testing code?
I think it's testingcode.com. The and is spelled out. So
that's okay, and. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we should do this again in the fall when you have a little more experience getting your hands dirty. And I'm so glad, just as a side note, Carlton has been mentioning that question around fixtures and PyTest for like years. So finally, like I saw him nodding. So something new to think about on this issue, because people have raised PyTest and that's always been the bugaboo that you were burned in some corporate projects on it. And so... And I can't help you out on it, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, people, the pros in your team learned it when there was no dash-dash fixtures. Would give
you something? Yeah, no, I'm going to give that a go. I didn't know about this, so I'm going to go and pull out a PyTest project and give that a go right now.
Okay. Well, so fun talking with both of you, and I wish you all luck, and I'm going to go get some coffee and wake up. They had me wake up at 5 in the morning to do this. Can you believe that?
That's what it takes. Well... And I'll just end with, we're taking a little bit of a break until the fall. We might slip in a special episode, but we'll be back. We'll be doing repeat episodes, but Carlton's not saying no. So this is our last one for a little bit.
All right.
So well, I just want to slide that in.
Good to talk to both of you.
Thanks for coming on, Jim.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. Okay. Bye.